Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and what a coincidence. We're going to talk more about that same topic right now. Maybe you missed on the media when they were tackling it, and this is something that is of interest to everybody, so let's talk about it here. Google's unofficial but widely quoted motto is "Don't be evil." The official company line is that the deal that Google recently introduced with Verizon Wireless to define the rules governing internet access holds to that lofty goal, but many net neutrality boosters who previously viewed Google as their staunchest corporate ally feel that the web giant has violated a promise and gone over to the profit-first dark side. So what happened? Well, Google's recent deal with Verizon is a proposal for how both the wired and the wireless internet should be regulated in the future. The deal suggests that wireless internet waves are fundamentally different from the wired web, and that internet that comes through a cell phone or other wireless package should not be subject to the same neutral rules that govern the internet at large. In essence, Google has agreed with Verizon that the provider of the wireless internet should be able to control which sites load the fastest, at least on their wireless devices. The deal also puts in place a neutral net plan for wired internet, but with some sizable loopholes that detractors say would allow any service provider plenty of leeway for non-neutrality. So where does the Google-Verizon plan leave us? What is the future of the internet? Is this evil? Media maven Siva Vaidyanathan joins us now for an update. He's an associate professor of media studies and law at the University of Virginia and writes the blog The Googleization of Everything. Hey, Siva, welcome back to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Hi, Brian. Good to talk to you again.
So did I get that right? What's the Google-Verizon deal in terms of wired versus wireless? And why are so many net neutrality boosters feeling betrayed by Google and thinking that now companies like Verizon will be able to control which websites we get faster than others?
Well, the Google-Verizon deal is merely just an agreement between the largest web based company in the world and the third largest internet service provider in the country. And so it doesn't have the power of policy yet. I think our concern is that it will become the template or could become the template for policy if either the FCC or Congress fails to take more seriously the public interest obligations that they have with this. Now, what they've agreed to is pretty much as you outlined. They've essentially created three levels of data flow. The first is what you might think of as Internet Classic, what the Google and Verizon leaders have called the public internet, although that public thing doesn't necessarily map very well. But think of it as Internet Classic. Think of it as those areas of communication, those areas of activity that are classically done on a computer that sits on your desktop that goes through a wire in the wall, or Wi-Fi or whatever, right? The sort of activity.
And then, about Wi-Fi, when we talk about Wi-Fi, like if you're on a laptop and you're getting into the internet or onto the internet through a router in your home or your office,
right. That's
still the wired internet,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because we're talking about either DSL or cable or something like a fiber optic cable coming into your home over the sort of network that's been established in our homes and offices for more than 20 years.
It's only getting it on a wireless device, like a 3G reception, 4G reception on a cell phone, where it becomes the wireless internet for this discussion, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So think about what you do over an iPhone, what you do over one of Google's Android phones, a smartphone activity, what you do over a BlackBerry, through AT&T, through Sprint, through Verizon. That is a very different question for this deal. Now, it's a thorny question, right? Let's also remember that when you're walking around the world with this device and you're using the map functions and you're checking your email and you're checking web pages, maybe you're reading blogs, you also want that device, of course, to be able to call 911 dependably at the right moment, right? You want to make sure that signal is dependable, because some really important things have to happen over that that might actually be more urgent than the sort of activities that go on in your walled computer, your wired computer at home. Now, that said, it's very important from public policy perspective and the value of those companies, the values of those companies, that those signals be strong. They not be crowded out by people downloading video, people downloading music, people abusing the sort of all-you-can-eat packages that these companies have been selling to us for some time. It's one of the reasons that AT&T, for instance, is going away from the all-you-can-eat data package and making you pay a tiered amount depending on how much data you use on an iPhone. You know, it's all about management. So
people on the Verizon Google side of this argument say there is such a thing as a data hog, right?
Yeah.
So if you get the service known as or the protocol known as BitTorrent, through which people can download movies, that takes up tons and tons of bandwidth. And even YouTube is seen as a bandwidth hog in
right.
this argument. And so the argument goes, shouldn't they have to pay more to a provider like Verizon so that the rest of the internet, has enough places to go or has enough bandwidth to get through on? And that's not the same as just trying to, commercialize the internet and who gets a leg up.
Well, this is easily solved by doing exactly what AT&T has been doing, which is creating, tiered levels of consumer payment. In other words, if I'm a bandwidth hog, if I'm pulling down a tremendous number of videos through the wireless internet, I might have a card plugged into my laptop and I'm streaming stuff or I'm taking stuff from BitTorrent. If I'm that guy, then of course it's thoroughly reasonable for me to have to pay more for using more gigabytes or terabytes in a month. That makes sense, but that's very different than discriminating one kind of content from another mm-hmm. or one source of content from another. That's a much more troublesome practice, and that's what Google has given up on. They've said, basically, we don't want to fight that fight. We are going to make sure that Verizon and hopefully other companies from their point of view don't encroach on the openness and freedom of the traditional internet,
right.
the classic internet.
So,
but they're letting the companies, the telecom companies, essentially determine the network management policies, which basically means content discrimination at that level.
So would it potentially mean something like this? This would be very relevant to us and our listeners. We're going out right now on radio airwaves, but WNYC also has a large internet listenership and a website that people use for all sorts of projects and up-to-the-minute news and culture and stuff. We're also a nonprofit organization without the financial resources of maybe MSNBC or Fox News to keep it in the journalism sphere. So for a public radio listener, how does the net neutrality discussion potentially affect them? Under this Verizon Google plan, would Verizon have the right to, say, allow MSNBC and Fox to load faster than other news sources on a BlackBerry if MSNBC and Fox are paying them more?
Yes, but I wouldn't worry too much about it. I wouldn't worry too much about it because that's not really their interest. In other words, WNYC, for all the richness of its content, is not a data-heavy producer the way that, let's say, Skype would be, right? Skype is, I think, the paradigm of what net neutrality should all be about in terms of our understanding, right? Skype is a service that offers low-cost or no-cost voice communication that directly challenges the locked-in monopolies of these telecom companies, at least locked in to your handset for the duration of your contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the real question is, can companies like Skype develop, establish themselves, and thrive and compete? Can services that have yet to be imagined emerge? Right? That's
mm-hmm.
really the question. And that's the thing we've benefited so much from over the last 20 years as what we think of as the classic internet mm-hmm. has infiltrated our lives. It's that ability for the guy you haven't heard of and the company you haven't heard of to emerge that really matters. There is a First Amendment implication here. And I think that that might be part of our concern. It certainly is all about openness of flows of different varieties of information when you're talking about a much more oppressive environment. Although, judging from our last discussion, apparently a lot of Americans don't actually believe in the First Amendment. But that's
another conversation,
right?
Why wouldn't the next step be that whoever has more money to spend would be able to buy their way to faster speeds than all other websites?
No, exactly. That is the case, and that is the problem. I just think that those sort of questions about which established media organization would send their content through faster is not necessarily the biggest short-term concern when it comes to net neutrality. It really is
one thing
we haven't imagined.
Before we run out of time, though, on an interesting side note, the Tea Party is a group that has done remarkable work with web organizing, and yet a network of Tea Party spokespeople, we have a comment from one of them on our comments page on this, coincidentally, has recently come out with a statement against net neutrality, saying it hurts market freedom. They don't want the government involved in this, just like they don't want the government involved in a lot. But is this a case of them cutting off their own nose
to give
their face conservative cred? Wouldn't a grassroots and essentially outside the status quo organizing group like the Tea Party be at most risk if net neutrality failed?
Exactly. What we really have to understand is here is that somebody's always regulating your channels of communication. The question is it going to be a company like AT&T, Comcast, Verizon, right, which may or may not have your interests in mind at any particular moment, or are we going to establish a rule through the government that says we're going to have minimal interference, which you could think of as actually deregulation, right? For deregulation to occur, sometimes you have to write a rule saying it's an open playing field in which everyone can compete. Now, you know, for those of us who believe in the creative power of capitalism, network neutrality should be one of those things that we all appreciate, because that's what gave us this tremendous amount of creativity over the internet over the past 20 years.
All right.
The internet's 40 years old. It was essentially created by the government, for the government, by the government. But through the wisdom of some very well-placed people at the right moment, we have managed to allow a tremendous amount of creativity to flow without direct government control. So we don't have a top-down system.
And
that's the sort of creative culture I think we need to maintain as we look forward into services that we haven't even imagined yet. And that's the problem with the Google Verizon deal. It's not just about mobile versus wired internet. Mm-hmm. It's about these high-intensity data services that the telecoms would love to supply to us, much like cable television. And Google has allowed them to control that as well through this deal.
It's the Google Verizon deal and net neutrality, as seen by media maven Siva Vaidyanathan, Associate Professor of Media Studies and Law at the University of Virginia. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, Brian. Bye-bye.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, why Latinos avoid debt more than many other Americans. Latinos, give us a call on your relationship to debt. We'll read you the results of a survey by the AP and Univision, and take your phone calls in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.